Unexpectedly heartfelt ukulele performance there from Iceland.
It's Eurovision on 95 BFM with our European correspondent Cameron Mulgan.
Let's begin as usual with an update on the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which is now in day 56, I believe.
Yeah, so according to UNHCR, it's about to hit 5 million refugees which have fled Ukraine. Although last week the UN had reported that up to 30,000 Ukrainians are returning home every day following the Russian withdrawal from parts of central and north Ukraine. In Lviv, it was the first time civilians were killed yesterday in an airstrike of a factory where at least 7 people were killed. One of the big news, probably you've all heard about it, was the Moskva sinking. So that was this is the flagship of the Black Sea Fleet, which was hit by a Ukrainian anti-ship missile late on Wednesday night. Russia initially claimed that it was a fire in an ammunition compartment and was being towed, but sunk in rough seas. However, footage released yesterday showed it listing in pretty calm water. It's quite significant as it was the biggest ship Russia was operating in the Black Sea, and it was provided air defense as well. In Mariupol, it's kind of the last stand at the moment, currently held at the Azovstal Iron and Steelworks. Russia had stated multiple times for the Ukrainian forces to surrender, which were ignored. There's also Ukrainian claims that civilians are hiding inside amongst a vast underground bunker network. I mentioned last week that British fighter Aidan Aslan was captured. So he's been shown in propaganda footage and interviews, along with another Brit called Sean Pinner. They both kind of looked pretty obviously under duress and beaten up a bit, and their families are calling for their release. In other news, the Battle of Donbass has begun today with heavy Russian artillery fire over the night and over on Ukrainian positions. This is the next big stage of the war, so expect to see lots of heavy fighting in the coming days and weeks. Today, the US and other allies are about to send more artillery, anti-tank and air defence aid because of this after a 90-minute call on today. In Berlin, Chancellor Olaf Scholz also said that they'll lend money to Ukraine in order to buy more anti-tank weapons and ammunition from German arms manufacturers. And the Czech Republic stated that it will repair Ukrainian tanks and armoured vehicles. And earlier this week, there was the first shipment of a new $800 million US military aid package, which arrived.
And the war has led to movements from both Finland and Sweden, who seem to be swinging towards joining NATO. Can you explain a little bit of background and tell me why that is?
Yeah, it's quite a significant shift with both countries, which could potentially join by the end of this year. So last week, Finland's Prime Minister Sanna Marin and Swedish Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson held a joint press conference, with Marin stated that Finland could join within weeks, not months. This follows a government report which will be debated in Finnish Parliament around this topic. So Ms. Marin's ruling Social Democrat Party has traditionally supported the policy of non-alignment, as recently as early this year, but now that's changed. Opinion polls have shown since the Russian invasion that joining NATO had support from 28% to 62%. There were initially calls to have a referendum on this topic, but with the believed increase of public support, it will probably just go to various parliamentary groups. And they want to make this, and Finland wants to make this decision before a NATO summit in the end of June. Finland has traditionally been neutral. So they fought two wars against the Soviet Union during World War II. And from 1949, they maintained neutral status. Sweden has also been a neutral country as it's part of its own national policy. So Sweden has an election in September this year. And there's a similar defense report due out in May. So her Social Democrats Party, which is in government, Magdalena Andersson's Social Democrats and other opposition parties are for it, however the Greens and the Left are against it. So it really depends probably what will happen with that report and then also how the elections go. If they were to join, it would probably be quite swift. So both countries are called enhanced opportunity partners, so they're already tightly aligned within NATO's command structure. And Sweden and Finland have both deployed troops to Afghanistan. All members within NATO are required to ratify it. However, the UK, France, and US and other countries have also indicated support. The Russian response to it, as you'd expect, has been anti. They've called it a provocation and saying that it would mean more military along the border and would also remove the status of a nuclear-free Baltic. However, the reaction to that was from the Lithuanian president, who pointed out that Russia has already had nuclear weapons in its exclave called Kaliningrad, which is next to Poland and Lithuania. So yeah, I think before the war, there were probably like quite valid criticisms of NATO expansionism or maintaining neutral in Sweden and Finland, but probably after the war, or probably since the invasion, I think it's hard to deny.
And can we talk now about refugee movement out of Ukraine? We've spoken a little bit about this in previous weeks, but just looking now, updated numbers, there's around 4.9 million refugees that have left Ukraine since the war began. Can we talk about the UK's response and specifically this recent plan to fly asylum seekers to Rwanda? Can you tell me about that?
So for the UK's Ukrainian refugee scheme, as of April 13th, under the family relocation or under the kind of family reunification, they've processed 31,000 visas, and for the sponsorship scheme, 25,000 visas. But over the weekend, a different policy was announced. Yeah, so separately, there's been a new refugee policy which has been announced orchestrated by Priti Patel, the Home Secretary. So this is if migrants arrive in Britain outside of established schemes, normally those who cross via the English Channel in small boats or via trucks and lorries, they'll be flown to Rwanda for processing. So if their application is successful, they will not be given refugee status to the UK, but instead be granted asylum by Rwanda. And those unsuccessful would be deported back to their country of origin or another safe place. The Home Office states that they plan to take around 50, and the pilot scheme will focus on single men arriving, as I said, in boats and lorries. So Priti Patel issued this as a ministerial direction amid concerns via her own Home Office civil servants, and it's due to start within the weeks. So the UK opposition politicians and various human rights groups have condemned the move as inhumane, unworkable, and a waste of money. The UN said it raised a number of human rights concerns, and the Archbishop of Canterbury also stated that it raises ethical questions. Last year, the UK government actually raised concerns to the UN about Rwanda, about allegations of extrajudicial killings, deaths in custody, enforced disappearances, and torture. So last year, 28,000 people arrived in the UK by boats, up from 8,500 in 2020, and dozens have died. So you might remember 27 people dying last November when a single boat capsized. This is another salvo of Priti Patel's hostile immigration laws. She was also wanting to push something called Clause 9 of the Nationality and Borders Bill. This would allow UK authorities to strip someone of their British citizenship without warning or opportunity to appeal. This was defeated in the Lords 2 weeks ago, but it's due to be debated again this week in the House of Commons. Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, it's kind of crazy. So her parents are Ugandan Indian and came to the UK in the 60s, which was pre-Idi Amin's deportation. However, in 2020, she admitted under her own immigration laws that her parents probably wouldn't be allowed into the UK.
My goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
Last week, we spoke about the French elections. Can you tell me what's happened since we last talked in the polls?
Yeah, so Macron's lead has kind of solidified. It's now roughly 54-46% against Le Pen. This is according to Politico. Le Pen received trouble over the weekend. There's been attention paid to her wanting to ban the headscarf in public, which Macron has attacked her on, although Le Pen has stated that it's not the main part of her policy agenda. And there was also a report released or leaked by the EU anti-fraud agency, which was about corruption, which was about embezzlement by Le Pen and her party. So Olaf reported that Le Pen and her party had misused over 600,000 euros while she was in the European Parliament from 2004 to 2017. And Le Pen is personally liable for up to 130,000. There's also already preliminary charges from a 2018 French investigation into a similar fraud. So the election's on Saturday. On Sunday. There's a big demo on Saturday planned against Le Pen for being far right. And it'll be interesting to see what happens on Sunday.
Yeah, and we'll chat about that next week. To wrap up, finally, the Venice Biennale is opening this weekend. What is that shaping up to look like?
Yeah, very, very excited. So this is the biannual arts festival in Venice. It starts this Saturday and it will run to the end of November. It's created by Cecilia Alemani, and it's the first time an Italian woman has held this position. And for the first time also, there's going to be more women creators than men. So there's 80 national pavilions. Five countries doing it for the first time: Cameroon, Namibia, Nepal, Oman, and Uganda. Both the US and the UK will be represented by Black women for the first time. The US will be represented by Simone Leigh, and for the UK, Sonia Boyce. There's also been a last-minute addition by Ukraine about the war. So yeah, that looks really, really cool. There's also the Venice Film Festival, which will happen in August.
Oh, fantastic. Lots to look forward to among the chaos.
Yeah, definitely.
Macedonia with a reggae twist.
That was Eurovision on 95 BFM.